The following program is intended for mature audiences.
With the second pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky.
Are you freaking serious?
Hello?
I don't understand what that means.
You're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And download every episode and more at BasicallyASportsShow.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike.
And you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Sidney Crosby's dead. He got hit in the head, was on the ice for a while, has not returned to the contest, went back to the locker room.
Wow.
And supposedly, according to one of the Pittsburgh writers on Twitter, the trainer came out of the locker room, whispered something in the coach's ear, and the coach made a very unpleasant face.
So whoever hit him, is that person banned for life now?
Matt Niskanen, he got a five-minute major and a game misconduct.
Wow.
So he's...
But you know what? It was complete bullshit. Because what happened was...
I was going to ask, is it legitimate, or is it just because it was Crosby?
It's because it was Crosby. Crosby was coming across the middle, you know, crashing the net. And he lost his balance, or somebody nudged him, and he kind of lost an edge, was falling, and so Niskanen was gonna hit him one way or another, I think, and just reacted to Crosby being right in front of his face. So when Crosby spun, his head was right where Niskanen's stick was as he was cross-checking him. So basically, Niskanen cross-checked Crosby right on the nose, and Crosby was down for a while, and so. You know, because obviously had Crosby not fallen, he wouldn't be elbowing or, you know, cross-checking him in the face. But
I don't know.
You can't be cross-checking people in the face.
Yeah, I mean, accidentally or otherwise, you gotta do something about it. I mean, whether it's Crosby or anybody else.
He's going to hit the guy. The guy falls to face level with his stick. What do you want him to do? Like,
well,
stop space-time continuum and, like...
Well, yeah,
you know, drop a stick, move.
That's exactly what I wanted to do. I mean, I didn't see it, so I don't know. But if he's out, that changes everything.
Well, the Penguins didn't score on that 5-minute major, so that was big for the Caps, who then came back and scored. So they're up 1-0 in this game now, despite being down, you know, 2-0 in the series.
Yeah.
Being down 2-0 isn't insurmountable in a series.
You don't like it, but you're right. It's not insurmountable.
Oh, and if Crosby's out and the Penguins are dealing with a lot of injuries on defense as it was, and Crosby was one of the reasons that they were still as good as they were despite all those injuries, it's maybe the door opened up a little bit for Washington. Maybe this isn't a bad thing to deal with for them, but I don't know.
Well, we'll see, because they haven't looked like they've got much for the Penguins up to this point in the first two games. They didn't show much. I will say this, though. Your Ducks showed me a whole lot yesterday in that game against the Oilers. That was pretty cool. Because when you guys were up, was it 3-1, 3-0?
We were up 3-0. Then the Oilers came back to tie it.
Yeah. And
as the world was still cleaning themselves up after Connor McDavid scored on us, the Ducks then took the lead again and pushed back out to a 6-3 win.
So. Yeah, and I thought that really was the defining moment of this series, because I really think had – the Oilers tied it up, and it stayed that way. They were going to win that game, put you down 3-0, and that's that. It's over. It's done. But the Ducks went out and did what they needed to do, get the 6-3 win, and I think completely changed the momentum in the series, because all of a sudden now the Ducks are like, hey, look at us. And the Oilers are like, what the hell? We came back, and we were winning the first two games, and look what they just did to us. So I think that was a huge, huge, huge turn of momentum in that game yesterday.
And those first two games were easily winnable for the Ducks too. It wasn't like Edmonton came in and like barnstormed us or anything. They won game one with a deflection off our defenseman's foot from behind the net. And then game two, they just had an incredible game from Cam Talbot, where the Ducks just overpowered him. There was three times we hit the post. One shot went through his five hole and trickled towards the goal line and nicked off the post. And it was like, what do we have to do to like buy him? And it just... I thought the Ducks could have won either of those first two games. They could be up 3-0 right now, but they're in the spot they are. So
to counter that, didn't you say before this series started that you weren't afraid of Patrick Maroon?
No, I'm still not, because he's a doofus.
I don't know. He seems to be having a good – he seems to be having a decent series.
He scored a goal.
Did he get a couple assists?
He's got a couple assists, yeah, because he's playing with Leon Draisaitl, who owns the Ducks. That's
– I'm just saying that getting that quick goal again after Edmonton had tied it up, because it was turning into one of those games where you get out to the lead and then the team comes back and it's just like, oh no moment. And the next thing you know, you're looking at a 5-3 deficit, and that's not what happened. And I thought that was huge for the Anaheim Ducks.
And really to have the game go that way too is better for the Ducks, I think, in a lot of ways, because you look at the last series, Edmonton had a game, like the way that was going, it looked like it was going to be another 7-0 game by you know, the Oilers lost.
Right.
Like the way they lost to the Sharks. And with a game like that, you can just brush it off. But the way that, you know, Edmonton was able to come back in it and then lost, I think that is a little bit harder for Edmonton to just kind of go
by. Right. It seemed to me like the Ducks just said, okay, we got the lead back. I mean, it had to be with very little time left in the second period. Get the lead back and then just hit the gas pedal in the third, and that was it. And to me, that just puts more of a mental thing on Edmonton than it ever would have, like you said, if they'd lost 7-0 or 3-0 for that matter. Because right. That's just a game that you just go, well, those happen. It's a 7-game series. But this, I think Edmonton will be okay. I don't think it's going to be any great shakes for them that they lost this game, but it really, I think, helped the Ducks a lot to be able to withstand that and not only withstand it, but come back and win by 3 goals the way they did. I think that's really important for them. They're not looking at a 3-0 deficit. They can tie it up, take it back home, and, you know, it's a 3-game series at that point.
I'm just saying, I like the Oil.
I like them, too.
Considering the way that Anaheim breezed through Calgary, the fact that the Oilers were able to go into Anaheim and, winnable games or not, get out of the pond with 2 wins up on the Ducks is impressive.
The one thing I learned over the first 2 games, though, that I didn't expect to have to learn over the first 2 games, I hate Oiler fans. They're entitled, snobbish, smarmy-ass Canadian hockey fans.
Ooh.
And I'm just not about it.
Ooh.
Replace Canadian with Sunbelt, and you get exactly how every Western Canadian fan felt about Ducks fans between that Calgary and Winnipeg. It was Calgary and Winnipeg series, so, you know.
What do we have here?
No. All right.
Yeah.
Look, these people.
All right, here we go.
The Oiler fans.
The Oilers have sucked for more than 10 years. I don't know how you could say they are entitled.
That plays into it. Instead of it being like 10 years of suck and now we're just good and we're along for the ride, every single one of those assholes I interacted with over the first 2 games, just, oh my God, they acted like this is what's supposed to be happening. We deserve this. We suffered for so long and now we deserve to be so good and look at us and we're winning and we're trouncing you and we're going to turn around in our dumb orange and blue Mohawks and wave our brand new flags in your faces. Like,
I'm not sure what I'm getting from this other than hockey fans are excited team is winning.
I think that this is a matter of, I think, and to be fair, Zach, I know what you're saying, and you had to sit right next to these people probably in your own building. But do you honestly think that you would feel this way about them if they weren't playing the Ducks?
No, I felt this way a little bit when they...
A little bit, but that's not the same.
Well, I felt this when they clinched their playoff spot, you looked at Oiler, if you had gone onto Twitter and seen, like, Oiler fans, they weren't acting like, oh my God, this is so great. It's just like, yeah, well, this is where we're supposed to be, and this is what's rightfully ours, so go Oilers.
If we based everything on Twitter, then we would be convinced that Bruins fans are nothing but racists and Cardinals fans are nothing but homophobes.
You haven't disproven either of those facts.
I was just going to say, aren't both those things true anyway?
No, but that's the thing, too. It's like, okay, it's just Twitter, and then when you see them in person and they're still that way, it's like, oh, like I saw plenty of shitty Calgary Flames fans online, but in interacting with Flames fans in the first 2 games, yeah, obviously it was different because the Ducks were beating them, but I didn't feel that way about any of them. They were just there and, you know, they lost, but like, the Oiler fans were a smidgen away from acting like Kings fans.
The Oilers are a team, you know, if you look at the breadth of what the Edmonton Oilers are, they had perhaps one of the greatest teams ever assembled, one of the greatest dynasties that ever hit the ice.
Yeah.
And then it was a whole bunch of mediocrity and then suckitude after that.
Ah, oh, but Ryan Smith.
And then, who cried when he went to the Islanders, by the way, and I don't blame him for that at all. And then after that, you know, they finally get their savior. I mean, for a team, for a team that got, I guess, enshrined in hockey lore because of Wayne Gretzky in his prime, then yeah, it's gonna be tough to slog through a whole lot of crap and Connor McDavid coming out in only his second year, really his first full year because he was out with injuries for a good part of last year.
Yeah, and I have things to say about that too. Continue.
Yeah, but my point is, I don't blame them for being excited that they are good again. And I know you were like, oh, Flames fans weren't like this, but as you said, they lost. And I guarantee you that if the Flames had been able to pull one out in Anaheim, maybe you wouldn't have such nice things to say about it. You know,
well, no. Here's again, though, Mike, here's the difference. Like, there's a difference between just being excited and happy. Like, you Leafs fans, you're excited, you're happy. Yeah, you didn't win, but you were winning some games in that series, and you said, hey, this is great. You know, we weren't supposed to be this good so quick, but here we are. This is fun. Aren't we having fun? Whereas the Oilers are like, yeah, this is what we deserve this because we were so bad. Now we need to win the cup right now. And it's like, back off your jets there a little bit, Oiler fan. Like, yeah, you've made it back. Congratulations. You should just think you won a playoff round. That's gravy to you right now that you're doing so well. You don't be a dick about it. And they were dicks. They were just flat out dicks.
Look, I don't know.
Feigning, shove it in your face, dicks.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is because, as I said in the chat before we started up the call, I got no beef with Anaheim Ducks fans. But even that aside, like, the team has, there's nothing for me to dislike about the Anaheim Ducks. They built a solid team, won a cup, and then after, like, the core of that team kind of dissipated, they were able to sort of rebuild on the fly, get a cup, you know, and they're still going strong in so much as they're always a constant playoff team, constant playoff contender. I've got no reason to dislike them. But for some reason, whenever we get a playoff series that's Anaheim versus some Western Canadian team, everyone just starts hating everyone else. And I don't know why.
I think you got a little bit of inferiority complex going on both sides of it. You've got the Sun Belt hockey fans who feel like they have to defend their hockey fandom. And then you've got the Edmontons and the Calgarys of the world who aren't the Montreals and the Torontos of the world. And maybe it's just a little bit of that and a little bit of it's playoff hockey. So, of course, emotions are going to run a little higher. And then when you're sitting right next to each other on opposite sides of the fence during the playoffs, I cannot believe how quickly I've gone from thinking, hey, this fan base is okay, to hating their guts over a single game here or there. So I think it's just a little bit all of that. I think it's, I think Edmonton, I don't know that maybe they're as bad as Zach says. I don't know. Maybe I think a little part of it is that, like, his team lost and they seemed worse maybe than they actually were. Who knows?
The guy that was sitting in front of me for the first period in game two, just listening to him talk, it was just like, oh, these fans, they don't, like, he didn't say this, but just the things he was saying was like, oh, these people don't know anything about hockey. Listen to me. Right. I can see the game through clear Canadian eyes.
That's like, what I'm saying, though. No,
there's plenty of good people that know how to watch a hockey game here, bud. Like,
I think there's a little bit of that. I think that, you know, you've got Edmonton Oilers fans. The Oilers fans, I mean, people that have been around as long as I have, these are fans that have got five cups in their pocket, right? So maybe they do feel a little bit entitled. Maybe they feel like they know a little bit more. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out.
The whole thing, though, about, like, oh, you know, snobby Canadian hockey fans, it's like, I have seen plenty of assholes online, you know, who are fans of Southern teams, Sunbelt teams, who go on and on about how, oh, Southern fans, we're Southern fans, we've got to, we've got to learn the game from scratch. We know the nuances of the game, whereas those dumb lugs up in the Northeast U.S. and Canada, they'll just watch anything. And it's like, oh, fuck off, guy. It's frustrating because it seems like Sunbelt hockey fans like to talk a lot of shit. And then as soon as a Canadian or Northern American hockey fan comes back with something, suddenly the people throwing a lot of shit get really thin-skinned and defensive.
Just happy that I'm a Midwestern hockey fan because that means I don't know shit and nobody cares about me. I just sit back and go, okay, this is all fine.
And it's either like you can talk shit, yeah, but then when, you know, if you want to make a joke at our expense, then when we come back with one at you guys about low ticket prices or banning the other team's jerseys, then, you know, you roll with the punches. Every team has their pile of shit their fan bases need to eat. You're no immune from eating yours than we are of ours.
Does Mitch Trubisky smoke?
He might start.
If he doesn't, he's already 30% less cool than Jay Cutler. I'm just saying. That was, I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, I never like to say, okay, this was a good draft or it was a bad draft, because we really don't know. I mean, we have no earthly idea. Every once in a while.
Jamarcus Russell was a highly touted draft prospect.
You know, every once in a while we get an Andrew Luck, a Peyton Manning, you know, a sure thing guy like that. But for the most part, you just don't know. But I don't know that I would have traded – would they trade 3 picks to move up one spot to draft a guy with 13 college starts?
To get a guy who was probably going to fall to them anyway.
Right. I read Peter King's column because he was embedded in the 49ers draft room this year.
Oh, that would have been a great place to.
And he's, you know, I mean, at the time, they're like, we don't know what they're doing. And one guy said, he goes, I bet they're moving up to get Trubisky. And that's exactly what happened. I don't know. I mean, you never know. The guy might be the next Joe Montana. Who knows? It's hard to say today. But, wow, that was just a straight. And, I mean, come on. That's a Cleveland Browns move. That's not something the Bears would do.
Yeah, I was actually.
The Bears actually traded 4 picks.
Oh, my God.
First, third, and fourth from this year, as well as their third rounder next year.
Oh, wow.
I just don't see that guy.
Well, and like, I mean, the Rams gave up a lot last year to get up to get Jared Goff, but it was kind of, people thought that he was actually going to be a good quarterback. I don't know if anybody feels that way about Mitch Trubisky.
That's what I mean. I even a guy like Goff, which I think they gave up too much to get too, but he had more of a, he was less of a question mark than Trubisky is. I mean, none of these guys in the quarterbacks in the draft.
Like it just seems like Trubisky is the top quarterback in the draft class because there weren't any other better quarterbacks in the draft class.
But that's not true. That's not true either, though. I would have taken Deshaun Watson, and he ended up being the third quarterback behind Mitch Trubisky and Patrick Mahomes.
Well, you know what? I hate to say it.
That's not a real name.
Patrick Mahomes II from Texas Tech.
Actually, his dad played baseball for the Twins, I believe. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, you know, the Bears do their thing, and then the Chiefs and Texans move up to take. Again, I'm you know, of the quarterbacks, if I were going to take one, it would have been Watson. But I don't think any of them, in my book at least, were anything better than a late first round, early second round pick.
Yeah. No, like Deshaun Watson at 12, that's great. I take that.
That's not bad. Yeah, you're not going to, you know, make a video and try to talk yourself into that at 12.
Yeah, but the best part is, though, despite you know, John Lynch, the new GM of the 49ers, only being on the job for like 5 minutes, he played Chicago middle. Because it's so great reading all these stories that have come out in the days since that basically, like, yeah, no one else wanted to trade up except Chicago, and the Niners knew that. The Niners knew that they wanted Trubisky, so the Niners were blowing smoke saying that they wanted a quarterback.
Whoa. John Lynch, the safety for the for the Broncos?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the GM for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Hey, left the broadcast booth to go be the GM of the 49ers.
And now again, you can't judge anything based on one draft, but he seems to know what he's doing.
At least in that part. I mean, I don't know what he's doing,
or is it just this easy to bamboozle the Chicago Bears?
Well, I read something else too. I'll run this past you guys. Okay, what's the GM for the Bears? Pace, is that his name?
Yeah.
There was a theory that he picked Trubisky because teams generally will give a quarterback 3 years.
Ryan Pace.
And that they will give a quarterback 3 years to develop. And there's these cynical people out there that think he went and did this to buy himself job security for 3 years.
Well, no, but the thing is, too, didn't they just pay out the ass for Mike Glennon?
Right. Yes. That's why none of it makes any sense.
Like, they paid out the ass for Mike Glennon. They traded all these picks to move up a spot that he didn't need to move. What the hell, Chicago Bears?
Okay. We never talked about when it happened, but I want to talk about it now because this is baffling to me. Is the quarterback market such that Mike Glennon can seriously demand? I mean, obviously it is because he got the money, but what the hell?
Well,
the problem is all the good quarterbacks are locked up.
Right.
That's why, like, there was going to be this big Tony Romo derby that never, you know.
That was surprising, too, speaking of that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
with Mike Glennon, there were a lot of people that think Mike Glennon's got some potential. Now, does he have the kind of potential that the Bears paid for? I don't know. But there were people out there that thought, given a chance, Glennon could be a serviceable NFL quarterback. So that makes a little bit of sense. Not the kind of money they paid sense, but I could see why they tried it. You know, it was kind of like a low risk, high reward move, but didn't they dump a bunch of money into him too?
Yeah, it's like $8 million a year or something like that.
That's what I don't get about the rationale being like, oh, all the good quarterbacks are locked up. Well, okay, all the good quarterbacks are locked up, but that doesn't mean you have to overpay for the mediocre ones who are on the market.
Right.
But that's how it always is, though, because when you say that, oh, well, I'm the only quarterback only decent quarterback on the market, then you can command your price point. To an extent.
It's the Matt Flynn corollary.
Yeah, kind of.
At least Flynn, though, had one game that, like, okay, it was stupid to pay him off one game, but at least he had a performance that, you know, he could say, look at that, give me the money. What has Mike Glennon ever done?
Two things on Mike Glennon. First off, wasn't he in North Carolina? I think he was at North Carolina State, wasn't he? Which is irrelevant, but it's just funny that there are two North Carolina quarterbacks involved in this, neither place being a place where you think of great quarterbacks coming from. Although I think Philip Rivers was from NC State, so yeah. But
also, Mike Glennon looks like someone shaved Napoleon Dynamite.
But if you look at these two players, though, okay, I think they're the same guy, Glennon and Trubisky. They're both guys you look at and go, okay, maybe. If with the right coaching and this and that, you might get something out of this. So to me, it's like the Bears already had Mr. Trubisky and decided, okay, we've got a guy that's just like him, already wrapped up, signed, and ready to go. Let's go out and get the real Mr. Trubisky now because we have the bootleg version. Now we want the real version. It makes no sense.
Do you want to know the quarterbacks that are on the Chicago Bears depth chart currently, by the way? Mike Glennon, Mitch Trubisky, Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
Really?
And Connor Shaw.
Oh, Connor Shaw's a former Cleveland Brown quarterback.
Okay.
That's some rarefied air there, man.
I will say, yeah, but I think like a third of the quarterbacks in the league are former Cleveland Browns quarterbacks.
It's actually 42%, but yeah, you're close, yeah.
Okay. You know what? I actually have to say I'm pleasantly surprised. I thought at least one of the McCowns would have been on that list.
Yeah, unfortunately. Now, McCown used to play for the Bears. Does that count?
He did, yes.
Yeah, maybe two of them for that matter. I'm not sure. I don't know what to make of this. I mean, if he turns out to be a great quarterback, then we've all forgotten we're even having this conversation in 3 years.
But how many quarterbacks can you think of, the great quarterbacks, that you only knew from 13 games in college?
I can't think of any, but I can think of a lot of guys that got drafted this highly because of 10 to 13 games. You guys are probably too young to remember, but the year the Browns came back, there was this guy, Akili Smith, an Oregon quarterback, that went number two to the Bengals. And the big debate was between him and Tim Couch. Well, obviously neither one of them worked out, but you see this happen a lot. I think we're going to see it. Yeah. I think we saw it last year with Jared Goff. The guy that everybody agreed was probably the better NFL prospect ended up going to the Eagles, but I don't know, man. Dan Patrick's show, they talked about it when I listened to either Friday or today. I don't remember, but they're like, when it comes to the draft, these teams lose their minds when it comes to quarterbacks. And I think the Bears provided a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I just don't – I mean, when they said number two, Mitch Trubisky, I went, what? Like,
yeah,
did I get to the second round somehow and miss the entire first round? What happened here?
Well, you look at the franchise quarterback is so important in the NFL.
It's, right.
You know, people always say the most important position in sports, and it's for a reason. Like, if you don't have a decent quarterback, you might as well, you know, just forfeit the season already.
Yeah.
Yeah, but does anyone think that Mike Glennon is going to be that guy?
But they don't. But that's the thing, they don't know.
See,
and so these teams are willing to try almost anything to try and find that guy. And they might strike gold somewhere that somebody didn't find.
And I think Mike Glennon was your basic stopgap measure. Put this guy, plug him in for a year or
two. That's a lot of money for a stopgap.
Yeah, it is. But like Zach said, they're so desperate for quarterbacks that's what he demanded.
Quarterbacks just make a lot of money now, man. Like, you can make a lot of money by not being a good quarterback. You just have to be somewhat NFL caliber, and you can.
And that's their name's Colin Kaepernick.
But, but speaking of that, though, like I said, I thought this was something that the Browns would do, like in an idiotic move. And there was talk they were going to take Mr. Trubisky number one. And I thought, oh, my God, please don't do that.
I have to say, I am proud of the Browns.
They did great in this draft, I thought.
Yeah, they did pretty good. Myles Garrett, the thing that we talked about where it was like, just draft the best player at that slot in your draft. I think they did it for the most part.
Well, and they got DeShone Kizer, Notre Dame quarterback, in the second round, which is a fine place to pick a guy like that.
Self-proclaimed next Tom Brady.
Yeah, a mix of Tom Brady and Cam Newton. Well, I hope so.
Yeah. He said that about himself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, man. Yeah, No. that's even worse than Joe Flacco calling himself elite.
No.
Yeah.
And DeShone Kizer, pretty good at Notre Dame, but... He got beat out by his backup quarterback when he got injured.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, each one of these guys, except for probably Watson, every one of these guys had a thing. I don't know much about Mahomes either. I mean, he played at Texas Tech, so, you know, you've got that crazy gimmick offense that they run, so you can't really tell anything. He threw the ball a lot.
There, yeah. Unless you're a wide receiver from Texas Tech, I don't really trust anything you can bring me.
Well, not only that, but, you know, we saw it last year with Carson Wentz, the guy that he played Division II, but guess what? He played in a pro-style offense, and look what – I mean, he was pretty good for Philadelphia.
But between Mariota and Goff, I have to think that the whole drafting the gimmick offense QB has got to be a dying.
Well, Mariota's not bad, though.
He's not bad.
He's not bad, but he's not – same time, he's not what people thought he would be.
And Goff, as dumb as he looks sometimes, he didn't really get a chance to do anything last year because that was
just weird and stupid. And Jeff Fisher, it's a good thing he was fired.
Well, and that's what we talked about last week too, is that with a quarterback, and that's why I'm glad the Browns didn't go out and waste a high pick on a quarterback, because until you've got an offensive line, it doesn't matter who you put back there. You've got to have a team that again, maybe you're not like going to say, okay, we get our franchise quarterback off to the Super Bowl, but you want to get it where the guy that you do get isn't going to spend 90% of his time looking at the sky or the ceiling of a dome.
And I guess what I was getting at earlier is obviously at some point, if you want to build a Super Bowl contender, you have to have that franchise quarterback, but you shouldn't just blindly grab whatever quarterback is available now. You should wait until that quarterback becomes available.
Right, and not only that,
but quarterback wasn't available at the time, so it's a good thing that Cleveland didn't.
Yeah, and not only that, but you don't also want to be solely focused on just getting that franchise quarterback, because we've seen that go badly too. We'll never know how good David Carr could have been, because he just, I think he set the record for being sacked in a season. I mean, you know, I Tim Couch too, and a lot of people are like, oh, he was a total bust. He wasn't terrible, but my God, he got beat to death.
Yeah, wasn't his problem that he was just sort of run out of football because they just didn't protect him?
Yeah. I mean, you know, him, David Carr, guys like that. So it's a fine line to walk, Derek's the Raiders quarterback, his younger brother.
Yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Carr, you should have picked more distinctive names for your children.
But I don't know what the Bears were thinking. It was just, you never know. It might work out for him, but boy, that's an awful lot to give up. And then they really blew my mind. They picked a kid from Ashland University with their second pick, a tight end.
Right. Yeah. The Rams first round pick, or not first round, because we didn't have any this year. Thanks, Jared Goff. They got a tight end from South. Excuse me. Hold on. I was about to sneeze and it didn't come. All right. They drafted a tight end from South Alabama, which is like a tiny school too.
Yeah, but Ashland's like D2 or D3. I mean, it's not even.
There's a lot of these smaller schools that you can make a name for yourself if you have a good combine or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess this kid's pretty good. He's big and everything. But Ashland University, because it's only about a half hour from where I live, their stadium is like a nice high school stadium. It's not – that's what I mean. It was just wild to see the Chicago Bears. I mean, I could see – taking this guy like in the fifth round, but number two, you know, your number two pick, second round. I don't know. I mean, maybe he's going to be really good, but I just
my
if I'm a Bears fan right now, I'm really nervous.
To go back to Trubisky for a moment, I can't remember if I said this on air or not, so I'll just throw it out again. Apparently, he does not know what a hard count is.
Really?
Great.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, and again, as Andy did the diligent digging through his Twitter timeline. 6 years ago, he, and this is a really important trait in a quarterback, and I'm glad that they found this for the Chicago Bears. He tweeted out, "I love to kiss titties."
That's important. Joe Montana, Tom Brady, guarantee you, they love it too.
Joe Namath, definitely.
Definitely Joe Namath, yeah. I think he invented it, actually.
But to be fair, I mean, that tweet was from when he was like 15 or 16 years old. So
yeah, right. Point.
Leonard Fournette at number four, I thought was high.
Very. But
and for the Jaguars, who have other issues.
Who was the, but you know, it's the Ezekiel Elliott thing. The Cowboys took him early last year. Yeah. Look how he worked out. Well, guess what? Going back to the quarterback thing again. Yeah. Zeke Elliott had a great season. Why? Because Dallas has got an incredible offensive line. Jacksonville does not. So Leonard Fournette's going to be getting 2.1 yards of carry, and everybody's going to be like, what's wrong with him? Nothing. Nobody's blocking for him. That's his problem. Yep.
True.
It's just, I don't know. Is it just that they overthink it this much, or are we just oversimplifying this game? Because I don't, there's a lot of things I look at and go, well, of course he's not going to work out because nobody can block for him.
Everything about this draft seems just second rate.
Yeah,
it wasn't the most talented laden draft. You know, and most of these drafts are going to be, I guess, kind of remembered by the quarterbacks that get taken usually. Mm-hmm. And when it's a down quarterback year, people are just going to assume it's a down year overall. I don't know. There's some nice picks in there that some teams made. Like, honestly, another thing the Browns did, Jabril Peppers.
I like that pick.
Yeah.
I like
he's not
going to
be a linebacker like he was in college, but he's pretty damn good. Who else made some nice picks? Your Los Angeles Chargers, Mike.
They had a hell of a good draft, I thought.
Well, the I still haven't found a way to make the Chargers song work with Los Angeles, so I'll get great. Back to you on that.
Yeah, they were trying to indoctrinate or, you know, ingratiate themselves with the Orange County fan base.
How'd that go for them?
Well, they had a season ticket holder only watch party at downtown Disney at the ESPN Zone there, the last remaining ESPN Zone in the country. And I guess they had a fun time. The other thing that was funny was on the NFL Network's coverage. Mm-hmm. You know, they always put the abbreviations where it's, you know, CLE, SF, whatever. The Los Angeles Chargers came up and they were LAC as appropriate. They will be the Los Angeles Football Clippers. And then when the Rams came up, they just said LA. Not
Ooh.
So I saw that. I'm like, oh, you're damn right, NFL Network. Good job.
Didn't we cover this when they moved that the NFL didn't even want the Chargers to exercise that option? So
I
could see this as deliberate.
But, you know, a lot of people are talking, though, that them playing in that soccer stadium, you know, they might get small, rabid crowds. It could turn out to be a benefit. Who knows?
It's going to be small, rabid road. Friendly crowds. Like, can you imagine that place when the Raiders play? Like, when the Raiders are quote unquote visiting the Chargers?
The other really great draft pick the Chargers made, they drafted Forrest Lamp, that guard from Western Kentucky. And he's one of a few guys that already had sponsorship deals going into the draft.
Oh.
He was sponsored by Lamps Plus.
That's Forrest awesome.
Lamp.
Who was the guy that had the Slim Jims? Or not
Slim
Jims.
Jack Links. The Sasquatch.
That was the most awesome moment in NFL draft history. This dude stands up, and all of a sudden, Sasquatch stands up behind him like, that guy just won the fucking draft right there. Yeah. That was so cool.
Charles Harris, defensive end out of Missouri.
Right.
22 to the Miami Dolphins.
Yes, and then all of a sudden, there's Sasquatch in the background. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool.
The Cowboys drafted a defensive end named Taco.
Yeah, that was the dude that came up sort of screaming and hollering, right? Or no, that was somebody else. That was who was the dude that brought the picture of his grandmother? And it would have been really touching if he wasn't so fucking angry about it.
Oh, I don't remember.
Some dude was angry about his grandma.
It was his grandmother on her deathbed. He promised her that he would go to Division I college to play football and that he would make the NFL. Well, then he got drafted, and he carried a picture up with her, and it was like, well, this is going to be really sweet. And then he starts yelling. Like, this is what it's all about. This is what I told you. And it was like, dude, you sound like Mr. T. You sound like you're really pissed off about this. And it's like, and Deion Sanders, of all people, says, you mean I want to channel that a little bit. Calm down. I'm like, really, Deion? You, of all people, are going to tell this
Deion Sanders is the voice of reason.
Right, exactly.
Younger brother of J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt, drafted by the Steelers in the first round.
Perfect. Oh, my God. They're going to love that kid there. He's white. And
yes. End statement.
Yeah, really. There's nothing else to say after that.
He's white. He's a big piece of meat. Yeah,
they're gonna love him. If his only thing they would like better is if his name was like Watsky or something Polish, then he'd really be on his way.
Oh yeah, T.J. Watsky. There you go.
Or Watslinski or something like that. Yeah, they'd love him to death.
What did you think of the actual draft presentation where they had it on the Rocky Steps in Philadelphia, and they had this big like festival sort of setup for it rather than in a theater with seats and stuff.
Okay. Here's what I thought about it. As far as the presentation goes, I thought it really worked. It worked very, very well. I found it troubling that so many people were there.
Right. Yeah. Like I would understand going to a theater to watch the draft and like you're there and you can see it and you can hear everything. If you're somebody that's 300 yards away from the stage, just in this crowd of drunk, angry Eagles fans in the middle of a Philadelphia street next to a statue of Ben Franklin. What are you doing? Why are you there?
Right.
You're going to learn everything on your phone before you're ever going to hear it from the actual stage.
Exactly. And I just don't understand why you would want to go stand outside to hear names be called. Because that's basically what it is. You're there to watch people read a list. Okay, yeah. That's fine. That's cool. You know, seeing it in a theater, I guess there's a kind of a bucket list kind of do it to say you've done it type feel to it. But this was just kind of weird. It looked great. They really pulled it off. Very successful. But again, I just found it odd that so many people went to it. That was just weird.
Ask the question of what was wrong with New York.
Now the NFL can sell it out for bids.
14 teams, Mike. 14 NFL teams had scouts in Philly watching this to see how they could market their city to get it next time around.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Because they had it in Chicago last year.
2 years in a row in Chicago, I heard.
Right. So they're going to be moving this thing around like they do with the NHL draft, like they do with everything else. Like it was, I liked when it was in Radio City Music Hall because that's just where it always was. And that was the tradition of the NFL draft. But, you know, if teams can see that they can get 100,000 people to stand outside and look at people walk on a stage and grab a jersey.
Well, you bring your sponsors in. I don't know if Coke or Pepsi has the NFL or whoever, but you bring all them in. You're selling merchandise.
I believe it's Pepsi.
Yeah. You're going to sell a lot of Pepsi. You're going to sell a lot of Nike gear. You're going to sell a lot of all that stuff. Yeah. So it makes sense. And it's probably not the worst thing in the world for the local economy either. I don't know how many people traveled for it. I saw a Tampa Bay fan just that I thought, I got to quit watching the NFL after watching this guy. They made a draft pick. I want to say they picked an offensive tackle. And he's like going, yes, yes. And he's like pumping his fists and stuff. I'm like, dude, really?
I love those people. I love them so much. Like, there was a fan from every single team that they can find on camera, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this guy is getting pumped up about the cornerback from Southwest Mississippi State at the, 29th pick.
I mean, and he was way into it. I was just like, okay.
You're either one of those fans that cheers everything you do or just say, okay, good pick. I like it, or you're somebody that boos.
See, I can't see myself getting excited enough to go to the NFL draft.
I think if my team had the number one pick, that would be the only time I'd be like, let's go see, and we knew that it was going to be the next great talent.
yeah,
that gets drafted.
Well, I mean, if it were in LA,
if I went to the Andrew Luck draft or something like that, when I was still a Colts fan, I'd be like, okay, let's go to the Andrew Luck draft. This is going to be the defining moment of our franchise.
Well, let's say that they have it. I don't know. We'll use Dodger Stadium as an example. You're not saying you wouldn't just go out of curiosity?
I probably would.
Yeah, I mean, if they had it in Cleveland, I'd go. I don't know if I'd be – I might go for 20 minutes just to see it, but I don't know if I'd stand there for 4 hours.
I'd go to the first round. I'd see the first few picks.
Right.
And then at a certain point, I'd be like, all right, I've seen what I need to see. But the people that show up for day two of the draft, like, come on, guys.
You're excited
for the third round pick? Really?
At the height of my Browns fandom back in the 80s, I mean, when it was just consumed me, it would have never occurred to me to stick around for day two of the draft. Just would have never even thought about it. No. I just don't get it. I mean, I know that I'm not into any sport that much. Not baseball, not anything that I would be that dedicated to it. I don't know.
Weird
world we've got ourselves in here, guys.
I went, when these things kind of come through, I almost went to the NHL draft because the Ducks had like two first round picks when I was in LA 1 year. And then, I went to that All-Star stuff when it's around. If it comes through, sure. But I couldn't see myself traveling.
No.
They haven't said where they're going to make it, next year, right?
I've heard Texas, Dallas, is top of the list.
The NFL announced, by the way, that it was the most attended draft. It was the largest draft crowd in history.
it was so, so well attended.
It was the hugest draft, the most well attended you've ever seen. 250,000 people.
Really?
Over the 3 days, yeah.
Wow.
See, I just feel like there's that story, right, about when ESPN first approached the NFL about airing the draft. And, like, the sentiment was like, nobody's going to watch this.
Right.
And I kind of just have that opinion. That's just sort of where I'm at. Like, I still can't believe, like, okay, yes, obviously. And this doesn't just go for football. It goes for hockey and football and basketball, the three drafts matter.
The baseball one is so funny.
Oh, my God. That's embarrassing. I'm sorry. It's just embarrassing.
The little roadshow they put in the MLB Network studios, all these people at tables. Like, it's cute that you think that people care.
Yeah.
Like, they don't.
No.
But okay, when the Leafs drafted Austin Matthews, like, I watched it happen on TV.
Sure.
But I don't know. It would have been one of those things, even then, like, if the Austin Matthews draft had been happening in my hometown, in my home market, then maybe I'd have gone to see it. But it's just weird to me because 9 times out of 10, like, I follow my teams on the draft, I keep up with the picks, pass, up to a certain point. As a fan, I'm like, all right, I got everything I needed to get out of, following this draft. Like, okay, we talk about how much of, like, a bitch it would be to go to a Super Bowl, but, like, okay, going to a Super Bowl would be on my bucket list. Stanley Cup Finals, bucket list, that kind of thing. But, like, no draft. It's just odd.
I think maybe it's more for, like, people like you and me, Greg, where we follow college football so closely, too.
Yeah.
That we know a lot of these players.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of interested, like, where does Leonard Fournette go?
I'm more interested in that aspect of it than I am about what my team gets. I'm really more interested, like okay, where's Fournette going to go? Who's going to take, say an Ohio State player? Where's a guy that we talked about during the season going to go? That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Where's Watson going to end up at,
Now let me ask you something, Greg. Are you happy with the way that your management team executed your wishes as an NFL owner?
Absolutely. I think the Packers had a pretty solid draft. We talked about it.
Did they have a first round pick?
Yeah, that was late.
They traded it. They traded it to the Browns.
Cornerback and safety with the first two picks. Now, I don't know how good these guys are, but that was definitely an area of need. Picked up a defensive tackle with the third pick in a line. I mean, first four picks of defense, that's what we talked about. That's what I said, we need to do this. We got to get defense, and they did, so I'm happy. Then they hung up on me like they always do.
it's stuff like that. Like, I know as a Rams fan, I'm like, okay, we need wide receivers and we need offensive line. We didn't draft any offensive linemen, so I was kind of like, but there wasn't like an offensive lineman like, oh, we need that guy. But, you know, for the most part, it's like, did my team draft players at that position that we needed? Cool. The rest of it is I'm interested to see where all the college players that I followed for their
agencies
go. So, I don't know. And, like, or the stories that we know of, like, all right, is anybody actually going to draft Joe Mixon? Oh, the Bengals drafted Joe Mixon?
Perfect segue, because that's what I wanted to talk about. Of all the teams in the NFL, how perfect is it that the fucking Cincinnati Bengals drafted that guy?
Yeah, does he not fit them perfectly? Joe Mixon, he's an Oklahoma running back that punched out a girl at a bar.
Oh, I heard about that guy. Okay, yeah, the Bengals are perfect for him.
Yeah.
He got acquitted, I think, ultimately, but there's still, like, video of him, like,
punching a girl. I heard that he settled. Like, he basically paid her off to settle or something is what I heard.
That's probably more like what it is.
Well, this is what brought up two interesting questions on the Dan Patrick Show today that I wanted to run past you guys. First off, if Joe Mixon, that guy, like, say he's a Ram or a Charger or a Packer, is it difficult to cheer for a guy like that, or do you kind of separate the player from the person? Like, let's say the Joe Mixon, the Rams are in a playoff game, and he gets the touchdown that, like, sends you to the NFC Championship. How do you feel about it?
I think, well, the only experience that I have in my time as a fan with that is not domestic violence, per se, but it was Todd Bertuzzi.
Okay.
He came to the Ducks 1 year. It was like the year after we won the cup, 2 years after we won the cup, something like that. And I was so pissed. I was like, this is the last guy in the league I want to cheer for. And when he's on the ice, like, you know, he's there and whatever. And then he would score a goal. And at first he's like, oh yeah, we scored. And then, oh shit, it was Todd Bertuzzi.
Was he the Donald Brashear guy? That was Bertuzzi, right? With Donald Brashear, the whole, was that Bertuzzi?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
And then Bertuzzi almost killed that one Avs player whose name escapes me at the moment.
Steve Moore.
I knew it was something Moore. Yeah. He like drove his head into the ice.
Yeah, right. I remember that too.
Yeah. And so, you know, you kind of – sometimes when you're watching these guys, you forget their number or who actually has it. And you're just like, yeah, my team scored. And then it clicks like, oh, shit, it's this guy. Well, I mean, I'm glad we scored, but, at first, when Bertuzzi would score, I'd kind of jump up initially, and once I realized who it was, I'd just sit back down while everybody else cheered, because I'm like, I don't support this guy. I don't want him on the team.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever had a situation where, like, my team, where I've rooted for a team that, like, had a bona fide scumbag. I've been lucky in that regard, so nothing immediately comes to mind. But I would imagine it would be difficult just based off of like, for example, I don't know if I could ever root for a team that, say, Mike Vick or Ben Roethlisberger played for.
Right.
Like I don't know. Like, yes. You say, oh, you know, Mike Vick paid his debt to society. Oh, yeah, but he still did a really shitty thing. And I don't think that would be easy
That's what my thing is. It's like, well, okay, he paid his debt to society and, you know, all that stuff. Okay, fine. That's all well and good. That doesn't mean I have to like him after that.
Yeah.
And that's what bugs me about it. And it seems to be particularly prevalent in the NFL that, well, he's, you know, he did his time, blah, blah, blah. It's time to give him a second chance. Oh, well, you go ahead. But, you know, I'm not going to. I, you know, Mike Vick, I don't care. And I guess he's like an advocate now for animal rescue groups and all that. It's like, no, go fuck yourself, dude. You can fuck right off. Because what you did
is get this guy.
What?
You know, I would always just prefer my team not to have the guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And you hope that your team just has the, I guess, kind of the understanding or the
self-awareness.
The basic self-awareness and moral decency.
The moral compass to know better.
Our fans don't want this guy. And I understand it's a little bit harder to do with the draft, especially it's football and those things kind of get forgotten quicker in football than in other sports, unfortunately.
Well, that was the thing. Like the Browns took a guy. I can't remember his name, but he was another one that has, the red flag character issue of domestic violence thing. And it was almost like they came out and said, look, you know, and we got caught up in the moment because he was there, took him, and now we're like going, well, maybe he's going to be a problem. We might not keep him after all. Well, what the fuck? I mean, come on. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm with you guys. I'd just rather not my team not have them. But I'm looking at the Bengals going, how can you possibly cheer for that team?
And I'm just not sure, like, how does that work? Like, we got caught up in the moment.
Well, that's not
like,
exactly what they said. It's just the way it came across to me. But, yeah.
Yeah, like, we just forgot we were just like, oh, we forgot who he was, but we were excited about him anyway.
But
like, I don't know.
Look at the Bengals. I mean, they have that Burdick guy, right? That I don't know if he's got off field issues or not, but he's a basically a criminal on the field with the stuff.
Vontaze.
Now you've got Mixon. They had Pac-Man
Jones. Arizona State Sun Devil, by the way.
You know, and I mean, what I guess I think of a guy like McCarthy, friend of the show, and I go, how do you root for this team? Because there's a lot of bad elements on your Cincinnati Bengals, dude. Lot. I mean, we saw. The problem, I mean, one of their big problems was that they're just, I don't know, we saw it happen against the Steelers a couple years ago in the playoffs. What happens when you fill a team with guys like this?
Yeah.
You know?
McCarthy, with his reaction to it on the thread, said a lot of people drop their season tickets after last season, and their grand plan to win them back is to draft that guy. It's almost like they seek out the worst possible thing they can do and then jump in with both feet.
Right.
At a certain point, you can't keep shitting on your fan base over and over and over and expect to run a successful franchise.
That's what I mean. I mean, this guy, he probably will be good. I mean, the kid's got talent. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's worth
it. I know Brent Musburger tried to stick up for him.
Yeah, well, Brett's had his awkward moments over the years, but that one probably took the cake, I think.
Yeah.
He was a thing. That was a thing, though. He was the whole... He's done his time, blah, blah, blah. Time to give the kid a second chance. Like, no, fuck off. No, it's not.
You'd think that the NFL, not just the NFL, but the NFL and the, I guess, professional football industry that exists around it would be far more sensitive about this kind of crap, given that it wasn't too long ago that, like, the entire NFL was almost brought down because of domestic violence issues.
Yeah, and then you go and draft this guy who, I don't know if you've seen the video, but Jesus, of this Joe
Mixon
character.
Roger Goodell has probably misplaced it already.
But I don't know. That's just, and then the other question that the Dan Patrick Show brought up, which I thought was good, it's like, what do you have to do not to get drafted by the NFL? Because it's pretty clear you can beat the daylights out of a woman, and that's not going to be a problem.
Well, hell, Jabril Peppers had a diluted sample at the combine or whatever in his urine test.
Yeah, a drug test doesn't bother me, whatever, especially if they're smoking pot as pain relief. Wouldn't you rather have your guys smoking weed than being hooked on Vicodin? I think I would.
I just mean in general, as I kind of said before, the NFL is one to kind of look over these things. Like, oh, you're a talented football player. It doesn't matter if you're a monster or not. Can you score?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, everyone remember from that same season with Adrian Peterson, right? Where originally the Vikings tried to reinstate him because the game they played without them, they got their asses kicked.
Yeah.
And they were trying to say, oh, it's not about winning football games. Bullshit. It was entirely about winning football games.
Yeah, they were all, taking the moral high ground and all that until they got their asses handed to them. And all of a sudden, the moral high ground didn't look so good anymore. I've said it before. I've got such a love-hate relationship with that league. I just don't know what to think. And sometimes, man, it's just tough. Shall we all say it in unison? Clippers are gonna
clip.
Yeah. Oh my.
Clippers clipped. They did it.
Again.
They did it, everybody. They lost the game 7 at home. They did it. I love the Clippers. They always talk about how we're different this time. No, you're no different than you.
Yeah, you went out earlier this time, didn't you?
Yeah.
I guess they are different.
So I just want to, say that it's been nice having the Clippers. Nice in quotation marks, having the Clippers be relevant for a bit, but it's just so fitting that the last breath of their relevancy will go out in a game 7 loss in the first round to a lower seeded team. So, because Chris Paul's old and probably won't come back or will be traded or something.
I've heard they're going to keep him, but Griffin's going to go.
They all got to go. This team is like they finally got competitive. They're actually a pretty darn good team for the most part, but they're just not better than the Spurs or the Warriors or the Cavaliers. They're just
or the Jazz, apparently.
Apparently.
I'm excited for the Jazz. Way back in 97 and 98, I cheered for the Jazz in two straight NBA finals because 10 and 11-year-old me was a little contrarian who didn't want to see Michael Jordan win championships. And I've had a soft spot for the Jazz ever since. So you know what? Go Jazz!
I was digging those green uniforms they wore last night. Are those their primaries? Yeah.
I don't know.
They're alternates, but they're wearing them for the playoffs.
Okay, because I think they look pretty good.
And what even is a primary uniform anymore?
Well, that's a good point.
Like, I was just out to dinner, and I saw that the Clippers game was on, and I saw them playing a team in green, and I'm like, aren't they playing the Jazz? What the hell is that? So that was interesting. But yeah, oh God, that Clippers team has reached its point of no return, and they've reached their expiration date, and I'm okay with that. So bye, Clippers.
I will say this. I think Blake Griffin going to the Thunder is a very interesting move. If Westbrook sticks around, that could make that team really good, I think.
Yeah. Well, he played college in Oklahoma.
Right.
But he's from – I think someone said he's from, like, the Washington area, like Virginia or something.
Oh, okay.
So they were talking about maybe going to the Wizards too.
That would be a bad spot. I mean, he's a good pickup for somebody out there if the Clippers don't want to hang on to him.
Yeah, he's a very good – third player on a team.
I do have one question, though, about the NBA playoffs.
Sure.
Okay. And this is really kind of a bigger question about sports in general. Of the two sports, now I've never played hockey, but I have played basketball. Which one seems harder to play? Like, would be more physically demanding to play? Hockey or basketball?
You have to skate,
you have to balance.
Well, so we're all in agreement then that hockey is definitely the more physically demanding sport.
I have never played basketball competitively, but I've played basketball before.
They're just different too, because a basketball player might play like 45 minutes of the entire game, and he's one of five people on the floor and
But I still think that overall it's more physically demanding to play hockey, which raises this question. Why in the hell is it that the second round of the NHL playoffs is into like games three and sometimes four in some cases, and we're just now getting around to the start of the first round of the NBA or the second round of the NBA playoffs?
I think a lot of that, though, is just because the NBA scheduling is.
They all started a week later.
Do you need a week off in between games, for fuck's sake? Come on.
I remember following the Raptors Bucks series. I'm like, okay, so that was game one. I think game two is in a month.
Yeah, like on July 4th, tune in for game two of the Raptors Bucks series. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's for TV, man.
Yeah, you know, I guess. It seems to me, though, that back in the heyday in the 80s, that you would see games back to back. I could swear I remember the Lakers and Celtics, like, okay, games one and two were in Boston. Thursday night's game one, Friday night's game two. Travel day Saturday, and then maybe Saturday and Sunday. Monday night, we're back at the Forum playing two more. This is relatively new.
Like, now they do Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. You know, they always try to do, like, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then they just kind of, you know, stretch it out as they can. There's always at least two games off or 2 days off between a lot of these games. Like,
yeah, but
we talked about it happening in the NHL this round to kind of line up the games better, but it's not like regular, whereas it is in the NBA, where there's a lot of almost every series has 2 days off between some of them.
That's what I'm saying, and I think that it's harder to get excited about it because it takes so damn long. Like, if you've got even a day off in between, it's easier. You just get into the groove of watching it, but I don't even know when the hell the Cavs are playing. I guess they played tonight. Sorry, Mike.
They played
beat the
tonight.
Raptors.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the extent of my knowledge with the NBA playoffs. The Clippers clipped again, and looks like the Cavaliers are finally into round two.
Yeah, the Cavaliers are into round two after a sweep. But, you know, as we always do, I'm going to open up one of the rosters of the four teams. of the teams. But I figure, okay, we might know some Celtics. You guys will know your Raptors and your Cavaliers. You know some Spurs. You know a couple people on the Rockets, maybe. Everyone knows the Warriors.
Before we dive into this, and trust me, I'm really looking forward to this because this is my favorite part of NBA talk. But
right.
Kind of going back to the conversation that we had earlier about sort of like American and Canadian fan bases, can Milwaukee Bucks fuck off about chanting USA, USA at the Toronto Raptors?
They didn't really do that, did they?
They did.
Oh, jeez.
The Rangers did it to the Canadians, too, last round.
Yeah, oh. And it's like, you do realize, Milwaukee Bucks, that most of the players on the Toronto Raptors are Americans, and your best player is Greek. So.
Yeah, and you realize, New York Rangers fans, that most of the players on your team are probably Canadian. So.
Or European. It's all Canadians and Swedes, anyway.
Yeah. So, who do we want to start with? Do we want to start with those upstart Utah Jazz or the Washington Wizards?
Let's go with the Jazz, because I think I can name some guys on the Wizards. I don't know the Jazz. Do I know any players on the Jazz?
I know. I'm looking at it now, and I can tell you, even me, I could have named only one Jazz player before looking at this roster.
Mike, do you know anybody from the Utah Jazz?
I can't. No. I'm tapping out right now.
I have his jersey.
Think Utah. Think white players.
Jimmer Fredette.
No, not anymore.
Oh.
No, play for Sacramento. Gordon Hayward is the star of the...
never heard of him.
He plays for Butler.
I don't care.
In the NCAAs. He's a white kid.
Oh, that's why they love him in Utah, then.
So are the Jazz now just Pacers West?
No, there's only 1, 2, 3 true white guys, and there's a Spaniard.
Well, name a couple players just to see if I know any of these guys.
Gordon Hayward.
Never heard of him.
Is the star. But you'll know Joe Johnson, of course.
I was going to say Joe Johnson, but I wasn't sure.
I didn't realize he was on the Jazz.
The Spaniard guy is important, though, because as we all know, the Spanish monarchy has a very strong tradition in the state of Utah.
Yes, in Salt Lake. All right, so let's. I'm just going to go down the list here. Washington Wizards.
This I can do. You got John Wall.
Yep, that's a one. That's
okay,
a one.
You've got. Well, you got John Wall.
Bradley Beal.
No, okay. What's this game? Is it Gilchrist Williams? Is he still with them? Or Kid Gilchrist?
No.
Nope. All right. No, I'm John Wall's it. That's the best I can do.
Bradley Beal, Marcin Gortat.
Oh yeah. Okay. He was on my old fantasy team on the Asylum boards.
Brandon Jennings.
Okay.
Nope. Trey Burke.
I've heard of him.
Bojan Bogdanovic.
I've actually heard of him too.
Here, you know what? Let's try one that you might know. How about your Cleveland Cavaliers, Greg?
Okay, this I can do at least three guys. All right,
all right.
You got Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
LeBron James.
He's on the team. Yes.
Kevin Love.
He is also there.
What's his name? The dude that J.R. Smith.
There's actually a lot of these guys. I know more of these guys than I thought I knew.
Is Iman Shumpert still on the team?
He is still on the team, according to this roster.
Tristan Thompson.
Reigning NBA champion.
Tristan Thompson.
Reigning champion Cleveland. I don't know how many times you can say that.
Okay, Tristan Thompson.
They'll be the former champions once, you know.
Oh.
Raptors are done with them.
That's about it. I think I ran off about six there, maybe seven.
All right. Your north, Mike.
Okay, Mikey. I've set the high water mark with six right now, so you've got to do that. You got to at least do six with your own team.
DeMar DeRozan.
Let's see. Yes, of course he's on the team.
Kyle Lowry.
Yes, also on the team.
Patrick Patterson.
Yes, on the team.
You might go.
Okay. Now we're getting now we're hitting the wall. DeMar Carroll.
Whoa.
He was on my fantasy team, so. Well,
there's a couple other guys that I've heard of before. The rest are kind of blanks.
And then I can never remember the guy's name. It's Jonas Valla.
Yeah, Jonas Valanciunas.
Valanciunas. Yeah, they got very European there.
We'll give it to him.
But, oh, Jonas Valanciunas, yes. And then.
All right, you're at five, right? One away from Greg's number.
Well, let me go back. Did I get five or six?
Tracy McGrady?
like 20 years ago.
I was almost like, Tracy McGrady, wait a second.
I know. Well, for a second, I'm like, does he still play?
Hall of Famer Tracy McGrady, he'll have you know now.
I'm just thinking, really? Okay, so I had the big three.
Big Sanity.
How about Bruno Caboclo?
Bruno Sammartino.
Longest reigning WWF World Champion, Bruno Sammartino.
Serge Ibaka, there's a name I know.
Hard to believe we call ourselves a sports show and we are so just woefully ignorant of the NBA.
I feel like it's their fault, not ours.
Let's see if we can name the challengers to the throne, the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, I can name four Warriors.
Steph Curry.
Yes.
Kevin Durant.
Right.
He is there. Yes.
Proud Golden State Warrior, Kevin Durant, by the way.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Crap. Okay, now I hit the wall on that. There we go.
Okay, you got Curry, Durant.
Yeah.
The guy that kicked LeBron last year. What was his name?
I'm not going to tell you. You got to know that.
The other dude, Thompson. I can't remember his first name. Michael Thompson's kid.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. Klay Thompson.
Klay Thompson. What was the guy's name?
He does like to kick people in between the groin. Went to Michigan State.
Oh, and who's the other guy? You know what? I'm sorry. That's the best I can do.
Wow. So you're the guy you're thinking of, Greg, is Draymond Green.
Draymond Green. Okay. And there's
the NBA Finals MVP from a season ago, Andre Iguodala.
Right. He's the one I couldn't think of. That's the guy I was trying to come up with.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well,
he used to play for the Raptors, right?
He played for the Sixers for a long time.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
There was another guy on the Raptors who had a similar name, though.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who's still in the San Antonio Spurs? Kawhi Leonard is a Spur.
What's his name? The French dude. Not Tony Parker. Is he still there?
Yeah,
Parker's still there.
Okay.
Somehow Tony Parker is still alive and well in the National Basketball Association.
Tim Duncan's gone, right?
Tim Duncan finally retired.
Okay.
There's one other really old Spur that's still there.
It's not David Robinson.
No. Comes from Argentina.
Oh, yeah, there's this. What's his name? I don't remember.
Ginobili. Joe.
Ginobili, that's it. Okay, yeah.
Pau Gasol, now a Spur.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. LaMarcus Aldridge.
He's a good ball player. He used to be with the Blazers. I've had him on my fantasy team pretty much like every year.
And there's about other bunch of guys that, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's like even on the best teams, like maybe I can name the starting five for the Cavs and the Warriors. I can get four deep on the Spurs. But once you get these guys coming off the bench, it's like, yeah, I don't know. A lot of these guys are interchangeable. They can be anybody.
What did we do? Yeah. The Celtics?
We did not do the Boston Celtics.
Okay, you got is Rondo still there?
No, he's a Chicago Bull.
Okay. So you got Isaiah Thomas with the Celtics.
Right. Not
Zeke. Not the Detroit Pistons. That would be something.
Yeah. lost a tooth last night in the game.
He's the only one I know anymore.
All right.
I know Paul Pierce isn't there anymore.
Kevin Durant?
I don't know. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is the only Celtic I can think of.
But Al Horford is a Celtic.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good move for them. He was with the Hawks before that, I believe.
Avery Bradley.
Okay, I've heard of him, yeah.
There's a lot of these Boston Celtics that I don't know either.
They were the number one seed in the East this year too, right?
Somehow, yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow both Cleveland and Toronto farted away enough games for...
So, but now of course, is the time for us to make our uneducated picks. Warriors, Jazz.
Oh, I think the Warriors have very little trouble with the Utah Jazz in their cool green jerseys.
Yeah. Go Jazz, but it's not happening.
Right.
Warriors.
Yeah, it'd be funny, but it's the Warriors.
Yeah.
Spurs and Rockets.
Now, you know, this is interesting. Okay, we didn't do the Rockets either. I can do a couple Rockets. James Harden.
Yeah, James Harden.
And
Yao Ming.
Charles Barkley.
Anyway, Spurs Rockets.
Is that the pajamas?
No, I think they've got like something kind of like a knockoff of their old 70s, 80s uniforms now, don't they? Well, you know, I don't know. I think the Rockets could pull this off. I'm going to go Rockets on this one.
Yeah, I think we're finally going to reach the point where, like, the ballad of the Spurs has sadly reached an end.
I don't know, though, man. Picking against Popovich is like picking against Belichick. I just don't know if it's smart to do, but I like the Rockets in this one.
Like, it's, yeah, it's not smart to do, but at what point is it just like,
yeah,
that it's over? And I don't like saying that because I honestly did enjoy how the Spurs kind of went about almost trolling the rest of the NBA.
Yeah, quietest dynasty you've ever, well, never heard of, really.
Yeah.
They won like five titles.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, like, Duncan area.
They're still the number two seed in the conference. Like, you know,
yeah,
they're always there.
I mean, they really are kind of like the New England Patriots of the NBA.
But unlike the Patriots, though, who were just like loud and obnoxious, like the Spurs, like they didn't have any big superstars really. I mean, Tim Duncan was their biggest star, and he was, you know, obviously a famous player, but he was very sound fundamentally. He wasn't a flashy player, and in a league like the NBA, which markets itself almost entirely based on star power, and like the team almost comes secondary.
Yeah,
the Spurs kind of trolled the system in that they were just a good basketball team.
Well, that, you know, and Duncan, I mean, you know, we joke about him being fundamentally sound and all that, but he's like 6'11", and those guys just don't. They're not exciting to watch anymore because it's now a league of, you know, 6'5 to 6'9 LeBron style guys that can, you know, move the ball down the court, shoot the three, dunk, and everything else. And Duncan was, you know, I think one of the last like pure inside players, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aside from Steph Curry, it's almost like all the league is just really long athletic dudes who can shoot and drive the basket and play defense.
The days of Kareem or the big centers and stuff, that's long gone.
I miss the Steve Nash days. Those were good days.
Yeah, I miss the Kareem days. That was basketball. Maybe it wasn't that good, but it sure seemed like it was really good back then. Hey, speaking of, I've got to get this in before I forget, guys. My nephew scored his first goal on Saturday.
Oh,
so we just got to get that in, yeah.
Is he no longer a goalie?
No, they found a kid that's better at goalie than he is, so he's playing. He's one of the wingers now. That's okay. He had an assist last week, and he had two blocks and a goal this week. My brother was talking to me about it, and he's like, this one kid just shoots all the time. I said, well, have my nephew. You know, when the kid's out there firing from the blue line, I said, just have him stay by the net. He'll get a rebound and just punch it home. That's exactly how he got his goal. So there you go. And they let him keep the puck and everything. That's pretty neat. Anyway, I just wanted to get that in. I couldn't be prouder.
Let's finish this NBA segment up, too.
All right.
I'll go Rockets, too, also.
Okay.
And Warriors beat the Rockets, and then Warriors go to the finals. I think we can both agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can. But it's, again, that symptom of the NBA where it's like we're going through all of this to get to the result we all know
right.
is coming, which is the Warriors are going to win the West.
Yeah.
I mean, with the NHL playoffs, the only thing that we're reasonably sure of is that Pittsburgh's probably got the best shot to make the finals. That's not nearly as definitive as we know it's going to be Cavs Warriors. But, okay, right. What was the other series? Go ahead.
Boston Wizards.
Now, this one, I think, again, potential for an upset here. I like this Wizards team. But
Boston is leading 1-0 in the series.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the Celtics, so they're the number one seed for a reason. Washington's on the way up, but I think the Celtics win this series.
I go Celtics also, just because. Like, I like John Wall a lot. Well, you know what? I do like John Wall a lot. And as I was reading through that Boston lineup, it's like, how are they where they are?
Yeah.
What the hell, Wizards? It doesn't matter. They're going to lose to the Cavaliers, who will unfortunately beat your Raptors, Mike.
Nah, that's not going to happen. Yeah, Boston.
And Cleveland to the final, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
They had some trouble with the Celtics this year, but the inevitability thing also plays in with the teams. I mean, they know that they're just kind of taken the necessary steps to get where they ultimately want to be, they'll find that switch and turn it on, and it'll be fine. Okay, are we done?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we can talk more about the inevitability that is the Cavs-Warriors when it is inevitable and we're there.
I was actually going to say, I'm going to go on a limb. I'm going to say Boston beats Cleveland.
That's not that crazy a pick, to be honest.
Aren't we at the point where, I admit I haven't been following the NBA thoroughly this season, but I seem to recall hearing that the Cavs were struggling a bit this season.
They have not been a well-oiled machine by any definition this year. That's true.
So, I don't know. Just for the sake of fighting off the inevitability, I'm just going to say that Boston pulls one out on them.
Okay. And with that, we're going to call it a night. Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and YouTube, and find us on Facebook. And with that, I go, everybody. Just entertain me with good hockey. That's all I'm asking for at this point.
Go, Ducks. Even the shit back up. Let's go.
I don't even care anymore. Just anybody who's not the Predators. Anyone else.
Please. But that's my other please. St. Louis, man up, guys.
Dude, you know what you're asking to do? Do you know what you're asking here?
I know it's a hard ask, and it's
St. Louis.
But
St. Louis, try not to be you.
This isn't even just if the Ducks make it to the next round. I don't want to play the Nashvilles. Could you imagine Nashville, Edmonton? Like, really? I don't want Nashville anything. Like, St. Louis, I could stomach, but Nashville, let's just get out of there.
Yeah, St. Louis. Try not to be you.
I like the Blues' chances in this. I'm still not entirely convinced with Nashville. Although they're playing very good hockey right now, but they were still the 8 seeds the way I look at it. All right, folks, we will see you next time. Again, go Rangers, go my St. Louis Blues, and I guess that's it.
Adios.
We the North.